top, could you just do a rather stagey and obvious hello, my name is, and...
Hi, my name's Alan Scott. The recording that you got is my maternal grandfather, William Henry Coleman.
If the officer was paying for this, how much was an officer getting paid?
Oh, I don't know what officers
pay,
but we didn't worry about that.
Well, the point is,
private money.
No, yeah,
private money. Couldn't live an army pay anything. Yeah.
During the First World War, he served as a saddler, and much of the recording you're about to hear relates to what he was doing and the incidental bits that referred to it.
I used to make a few.
Well, you could have bought the beer if you had one.
What few bob used to make? Well, I don't know. I collected their money while we were up there by working. But when we got back, my mate and I, we'd only two and got any because they paid their bills. Well, the only one thing you do, you're going to be sociable, isn't it?
The thing is, you've got to bear in mind, my grandfather came from effectively a working class community in Lambeth, Oblique Clapham. You know, you are talking about a relatively poor inner city area, you know, so there would have been an attitude. And I mean, while he was not a true Cockney in the definition of being born within the sound of Bow Bells, he was very definitely a Londoner.
They're talking about what they're going to make with the brass that they get from the shells and all the various things that they could do. And I think they do actually mention prices.
Effectively, recycling a century ago.
Yeah.
But why did they give you the money? What were you doing for them?
Well, we made them identity discs. If we ordered a letter from Ordnance, what we wanted, which they sent.
What did you tell Ordnance you were using it for?
I used to use some on the harvest as well. And then every chin strap buckle, you know the old thing, that little brass buckle, every one of them we could lay our hands on, you see. And the shoemaker got the brass rivets, they cut up the shell cases for the sheet brass on the bevel edge.
New ones, presumably.
Huh?
New shell cases.
Oh, old ones, oh, they've been used. Mm-hmm. There are plenty of them. Then we had our issue of numerals. Then we stamped their name and regiment number on that, and for the chin strap up in it. And we used to charge a franc and a half. Well, that was tenpence, 15 pence. Mm-hmm. Well, we used to have this for paper like that, then. Royal Garrison, Royal Horse, so and so. Chappy come, you know, told you, I've got a mate of my name on some of them. They'll bring your list along. Then, you know, my pocketbook got up scared of the pig skin one. Mm-hmm. He's made a pocketbook like that.
He
used to make one of them for 5 francs. Well, a franc was worth 10 pence. Yeah. Army leather. Then we find somebody's map case or something like that for a bit of celluloid, cut out an oval or a square or whatever it is, and insert their photographs and stamps, you see. That was 5 francs.
So that was
about
4 bob, wasn't it?
Yeah. Then there's a belt, money belt. We saw the basils for that, what they call basil skins, they're soft. Hold them in half, stitch them along the top end, put the buckle and strap on the other end, turn down flat, just half and long. I think I was at about a little dearer than a pocketbook, but it was much more stitching than that. We used to make those. If you polished the officer Sam Brown belt, what did we used to get? About 25 francs for that.
The officer class are all employing the working class to do all the work for. Absolutely no change at all. And just shining up a Sam Brown would be quite a lot of...
We used to get about 25 francs for that. And of course...
Polishing it.
25
francs or
25
something.
They're all bone and beeswax and everything.
25 francs, I should think.
Yeah, but then, of course, we used to make...
It's a lot of money.
Oh, wait a minute, Grandpa, you're saying 25...
Wow. A quid? Yeah. Because they pay for their own staff, the officers.
Yeah, so you're saying you get a quid against...
So they
quid.
Cop up.
Yeah. You got a quid for that.
Yeah, against the ordinary...
The ordinary squaddy's pay was what? A bob a day?
A bob a day.
A day, yeah.
But the officers
were... That's the officers
only, Sam Brown. I know that. But you're effectively getting 20 men's pay for polishing that, which would have taken you
a long time.
Probably best part of a day's work.
Then they used to make all their hunting gear, but they had to buy all the stones.
It's all army stuff, isn't
it? Army leather.
Army leather, of course it was. Where else are they going to get
re-line
it?
Reline a riding saddle, which you very pleased. Of course, that was up. I couldn't get one down anywhere else.
But were they hunting over there?
No, there's the hunting equipment here.
What, to bring back home?
No, for their hound and for the horses.
So they found time to hunt when...
No, that was the gear they wore. They didn't wear army regulation harness. They wore private.
Oh, special harnesses.
Well, silver plated buckles and all that sort of thing.
This is a bit of personal pride, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's
all yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Poor old man, yeah. Trying to bring up in a cafe, he had to go all the way. Then the Martin Go, you get so much for a Martin Go. That's the strap that comes up round the horse's belly, between the front legs, comes up the front with a medallion or something on the front, splits.
Yeah.
And then goes up to his head where the reins come through. That stops his head from
going.
Who used to get... Well, I don't know what you've got.
When you were talking about pocketbooks, identity tag holders, you were probably talking about a piece of leather which is maybe 6 inches square max. Now, if you visualise how a saddle is made, you are using pieces of leather which are probably going to be 2 or 3 foot square. So what you're doing is you're probably, a lot of this will be done in fact from the offcuts, from what would effectively be waste material, because leather is not something you can recycle. All you can do is use the scraps. And I certainly remember as a child having bookmarks which Grandpa had made from leftovers.
Our fitter, Airman Tom's name, that was his bit. He used to make coal scuttles. That was his sidewalk. The shell case, cut it down and put a loop on the back, make it a shell, saw the tape on, bullets. Then they asked where he got them from. He soldered the bullets on the bottom for a leg. I sold them.
I'm glad you didn't bring anything like that home.
Right. Oh, no, I made that big skin map case, didn't I?
Yes.
I made that.
And
earlier.
The cribbage ball.
And my shaving glass.
The pig skin came off at the picket you had.
No, that was a blonde dead officer.
What, the pig skin?
The leather.
Oh, the leather.
And his, you see the and his, and his graph cellar oil in front, it belonged to him.
Yes.
That's why we don't need him. That's where he's gone. Do a nice bit of pig skin.
But what about the cribbage board, Pop?
Oh, I found that in a little village called Bursary.
Oh, I thought
fire.
You'd made it.
That was on fire when I got that. I also got a pheasant eyed waistcoat from that place.
A what?
Pheasant eyed patterned waistcoat.
Mm.
Oh, it's a beauty, that place.
It walked up in front of
me. We entered the place, and it's like a large village. All the street pole lamps, you know what the lamps are going?
Yeah.
Or telegraph poles, they were all burning, but the Germans had set like these one of them, of course, we put them out. Them. And we came to one of these places, and think of a cellar full of little potatoes. Of course, there went the fire in, there went the potatoes. Fall out of the lamp. And I done a bit more scouting. I found this old cribbage board, because I'm near the end of all that, because I marked it 1918. Yeah. And I found a nice waistcoat, it was a bit chilly, and a little pheasant. Pheasant eyes all over the world, a real fancy one.
Yes, we've gone back to making things. A chap had made a coal scuttle and stuff out of pigskin, but we're now moving on to, I think technically this is looting.
The behaviour of any army throughout history, going back to time immemorial, and to a certain extent whether you describe it as looting or whether you describe it as salvage, because from the sounds of it, it was a burning building, therefore nothing would have been left. The impression I got actually of the story of the pigskin map case was that in fact it wasn't a made item. He found it. It was basically the property of a dead man, and possession 9 points of the law.
I think we get a little bit more about finding things in the rubble. So,
yes.
Then we went into civilian occupation. There's no civilian people. And we picked the house we were going to live in, which finally got the best decor and furniture and whatever. And our piano was a bit flat. So we've had a mosey round up the road and found a better one. We changed them over. Anyway, we get all established nicely with this piano and a ding dong and bang at the door of the military police. Did you know you're liable for looting?
So you had to trundle the other piano back again?
Yeah, put it on back. We got our guns up there somewhere, I can't remember exactly where, somewhere in that area. We got our guns in position, like a house, if I remember rightly, and we were firing through the wall, you know. And something happened, an officer came along and he brought this old lady with him, and I suppose a parson, I suppose, I couldn't remember now. He said, could we move the gun? Well, of course they could, they moved the gun. And the old girl said something about that, that they put up this stone or brick or whatever you got there. Not long as any amount of fraction there, and the boys have been sitting on it, didn't know. The boys have been sitting on it and didn't know. That was our girl savings there under the floor. They didn't know all them lovely frakes were sitting there.
But it's the fact that everyone is actually really very practical.
No, I mean, Grandpa would turn his hand to whatever needed doing. Mm. Because the treat when I went and saw my grandfather was, oh, can we go and work in the shed? And the warning on that was, yes, but watch those knives because they're sharp. And his definition of a sharp knife was that you could hold a Rizzler paper up by its edge, bring the knife down across it, and if it didn't go through in a wunner, that knife was not sharp. That's where I learned to respect tools. I'm useless with them, but I learned that respect for them. You look after your tools, they'll look after you.
Wartime Memories could not have been created without the support of my patrons. Become a patron by going to www.patreon.com/RobertCrichton.